105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the BizConnect radio show with myself, Martin White. We've got two fabulous guests in the studio with us today, as always. On my right, we have...
Adrian Dante. I'm partner at Opus Restructuring in Maidstone.
Adrian, lovely to have you with us today. And on my left...
Gareth Scott from S&S Solicitors in Maidstone.
Fantastic. Likewise, Gareth. Lovely to see you today. Needless to say, we're going to be talking about all things business restructuring. We'll be covering off questions about insolvency, giving a general sort of overview of the market at the moment in terms of the pain that businesses are perhaps going through. And also we'll be talking about the legal system in some detail with Gareth and what's going on with the courts at the moment and perhaps some of the alternatives to a traditional kind of court process that people might want to think about in their own lives. So do stay with us. We're on for the next hour or so, but I think what we'll do now, guys, is we'll play a little bit of music and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the BizConnect radio show today. I think what we're going to do first up is have a chat with Adrian Dante from Opus Restructuring, if we can. Adrian, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you with us, AD.
Thank you.
I think what we'll do, if we can, is start with a sort of an overview of what's going on in the economy at the moment, in the marketplace. What's happening with businesses out there, Ady, particularly smaller businesses?
Well, I mean, it's well documented that a lot of businesses are struggling, you know, coping with the post-pandemic situation. A lot of businesses are viable. They have got good order books, but they are carrying quite a lot of debt. You know, this is obviously built up from the from all the support that was on offer from the government, as we know, well written in terms of the BBLs and the CBIL loans from the banks and all the grants. But of course, this has to be repaid back. And just putting things into context a little bit, so one in four UK businesses applied for a bounce back loan, and funds provided circa 47 billion of credit via 1.6 million loans and significant losses were inevitable, but about 17 billion or so that may never be repaid represents an enormous blow. And of course we're aware of that. There's up to £4 to 5 billion worth of loans that won't be recovered due to fraud.
So the government's going to have another black hole in their budget that Mr. Sunak is going to have to deal with at some point. But I mean, I guess it's fair to say there's huge headwinds in the economy at the moment as well, aren't there?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, we've got employment market problems. You know, we've got a huge number of vacancies. You know, over a million, I believe, vacancies now. We've got, you know, inflationary pressures. We've got supply chain issues. We've still got high street, you know, the high street woes that we saw before the pandemic are still continuing, obviously. You know, we've got shop rents still unresolved.
Absolutely.
So there's a huge amount of kind of pressure that businesses have to kind of deal with at the moment.
Yeah, it feels like there's going to be some sort of perfect storm that's brewing.
It does feel like that, doesn't
come
it?
Come the second quarter of this year, and just touching on, and Gareth might be able to chip in at some point with the in terms of rent, because there is currently an extended embargo on commercial landlords to the 31st of March, which stops them from collecting out on rent arrears. So when that comes to an end, you'll probably see a significant change on that situation.
And then, of course, and it was in the news again this weekend. We've got national insurance on the rise from April as well, and the government are adamant they're not going to, you know, roll back on that one. So that's another cost increase, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, just I mean, thinking about you know, the last 10 years or so, we've a lot of cheap borrowing, and as you mentioned, with the inflationary pressures, that will bring potentially interest rate rises, and that will put pressure on the banks and the other lenders to put their rates up, and that's going to, again, it's going to cause a lot of problems, you know, for a lot of businesses.
So a really, really, really difficult time for many businesses. Not all businesses, of course, because some businesses are...
Some are thriving.
Yeah, they're the reverse of all of this in many ways, aren't they? They've actually got an order book that they can't necessarily fulfil at the moment.
Absolutely.
And that brings its own problems.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some stats out. I mean, from the last quarter, there's in excess of 500,000 companies, small businesses that are under significant distress, and I suspect it's all to do with the with the support that was offered and taken in terms of the loans, and now they've got to try and trade out of that, but also service those loans, which can be very difficult.
Yeah, so you know they've really got to have a tight kind of. A tight control on their cash flow at the moment,
absolutely,
haven't they, in that respect. But I work with a lot of, increasingly work with a lot of renewables companies. So, you know, businesses in the solar industry, for example, you know, the wind power, you know, green energy companies.
Yep.
And construction firms as well that are kind of increasingly in the sustainability space.
Yes.
And certainly with the renewable energy guys, you know, they're struggling to find people to help them grow their business.
Yes.
You know, there aren't enough qualified people out there. You know, there isn't a ready-made labour market that they can tap into to grow their business. And so, you know, I guess you reach the point where you're going to have to turn business away because you just can't service it, which is kind of the last thing the Chancellor wants to hear at the moment,
absolutely,
I would imagine.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of manage that, and over trading, I guess, AD, you know.
Yeah, that's a concept that sort of has been a feature of recessions in years gone by, where economies emerge from recession.
Mm.
But of course, as they do that, they can't get credit. And they've got orders coming in that they can't fund.
So you've got working capital problem.
Absolutely.
You know, because I need to buy the stock in to be able to then go and, you know, fit out a commercial solar project. But I'm not going to get paid, you know, until I've kind of, until I've done the project. So I need some working capital to kind of fund that process.
Yes, absolutely.
And that becomes a problem as well.
Correct.
So, I mean, talking about specifically kind of insolvency, you know, is there a kind of a simple checklist that businesses can kind of, you know, an audit that businesses can kind of go through in their own business? You know, what are the warning signs, if you like, that might kind of indicate actually you may need to address this now?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious one would be you know, creditor pressure. That's quite significant, but in terms of it, like in doing something internally, it's the cash flow. It's all about the numbers, you know. It's keeping on top of those numbers, you know, and maintaining a smooth cash flow. And as soon as like it starts to dip, or you start to sort of struggle and think, where am I going to pay that? That is when it's time then to take advice, maybe just some informal advice from your professional advisor, being the accountant or lawyer, and look at the situation and try to think ahead and say, you know, carry on in the same vein. So it is difficult because a lot of businesses at the moment, what we're seeing, they don't appear to be under that much pressure to actually go and get some advice. They're kind of like working on the basis that things will get better, which they will do, of course. But also some are, I've spoken to some that they're expecting a bit more help from the government, which is probably going to be highly unlikely now.
Do you think, Adrian, that there's a bit of a mindset thing? Because the thing I've seen is that when the pandemic kind of hit, I think people went on to what I like to call a sort of war footing. And it was kind of like living month to month in the hope that we can just get through.
Yes. Mm.
And then that mindset has changed, that kind of careful planning that probably a lot of businesses used to do. And now they're not quite sure whether they need to go back to the careful planning or whether it's still the war footing.
Mm.
And that comes from some people are hoping there's going to be more from the government, maybe. Some people are thinking, well, can we go back to what we were doing before? And it's almost that uncertainty that leaves them in that kind of no man's zone, I think.
No, that's right. right, absolutely. I've said on numerous occasions in the last couple of years on various Zoom meetings and networking meetings online that what we will be required is all stakeholders coming together on businesses and to work with one another to find the solution that's going to work for all parties. A lot of trust, you know, businesses, we're going to have to base it on a lot of trust, perhaps more so than pre-pandemic.
It's a really good question though, isn't it, Gareth? Because, you know, are we out of it or aren't we out of it? And, you know, recently we had this kind of this new variant, Omicron. And I guess a lot of people would have been expecting a full lockdown on the back of that. It didn't actually happen. Yes, we were advised to kind of work from home wherever possible. But you're right. I think there's still a huge amount of uncertainty, in the marketplace. I don't think business confidence, and I think the business confidence indicators are actually quite low at the moment, certainly within the small business community. So I think there is still a lot of uncertainty. You know, we don't know if we're going to get another Omicron and what that's going to kind of look like, you know, 6 months down the line. So you're absolutely right. It's incredibly difficult to plan and plan for what eventuality,
yeah,
you know, you plan to survive, plan to expand, plan to do what?
Yeah. And you can't just, the feeling I get is that there's almost this, if we all kind of wish it to be true, it will be. That's kind of what, sort of almost what the government are hoping. Well, if we just say it's not happening anymore and we can get, wish ourselves out of it, then we will start to thrive.
Yeah.
But it is difficult because it's so uncertain and everyone's just panicking about, you know, what's around the next corner.
Yes. Yeah.
There is a lot of pain, I think, still stored up for a lot of people. But, I mean, hopefully people like me and Adrian are here to help that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Guys, so I think what we'll do, we'll play a little bit more music. And when we come back, Adie, I'd like to kind of think about some of the practical things that business owners can do. You know, if they think they might be getting themselves into a spot of bother at the moment with regard to working capital or cash flow, whatever it might be.
Absolutely.
So stay with us, everybody, and we'll be straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect.
The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the BizConnect radio show this afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm delighted that we've got two fabulous studio guests with us today. We've got Adrian Dante from Opus Restructuring and Insolvency Services, and we've also got Gareth Scott from SNS Solicitors with us. Thanks so much for joining us today, guys. Adrian, before the break, we were talking about some of the headwinds that businesses are facing at the moment, you know, as we kind of emerge from COVID. And I think one of the things that we were talking about perhaps was the idea of a sort of a zombie company, if you like. And I think that's something that we've, a term that we've become used to, you know, certainly during kind of recessionary periods. And what does that actually mean, Adrian?
Yeah. I mean, the zombie concept, as you say, has been around for quite some time. It's probably created from the last recession back in 2008 and 2009. And these are companies that are kind of just existing. That's probably the best word to describe them. And just servicing what outstanding loans they've got. They've got no real prospect of growth. Mm. They've got no real prospect of survival. Mm. And they are just limping on. Mm. And they're probably employing some good, skillful people, you know, that could easily be deployed elsewhere. Mm. So
they're not really adding any value
no.
to the economy per se. And going back to what Gareth was saying before the break, you know, it's, you know, if you're not planning for growth, ultimately in your business, you know, what are you in business for,
I guess? Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there's an opportunity for them to, you know, look at an exit strategy, you know, to have a clean exit from the sector that they're in,
mm-hmm.
or you know, or you know, inevitably it will be taken out of their out of their hands as and when the economy opens up more and more. Creditors are giving more back to where we were in pre-pandemic, where they're able to pursue debts and the enforcement procedures that go with it.
So let's talk specifically about where you come in this whole process, Adrian. Because you like to kind of start this the discussion with the business owner by doing a sort of an initial review of their business, don't
you? That's right. And so they what we're seeing at the moment, obviously, that we discussed already, there's an inevitability of, like, there isn't no exit, there isn't no prospect of survival, or there's an opportunity to decrease the business or reduce it in some capacity, and try and move on and that way. But that will obviously take agreement with other stakeholders, whether it's the bank, HMRC, and general supply creditors.
So fundamentally, am I right in thinking in the first instance you'll be looking at things like, okay, you know, what are the fundamentals of your business? What does your order book look like? What does your customer base look like? You know, are you able to service that business profitably? Is there enough margin in the business to actually pay the overhead that you need to kind of generate that margin?
And just reviewing the business model and the business plan and trying to update it and just try and be as flexible as possible. And communication is a key as well. You know, people in business don't communicate with all their stakeholders in a timely fashion, and that's when things start to go wrong.
And I think the other key benefit to all of this for me is that, you know, when you're running a business, owning a business is a very emotional tie, attachment. And I think as a result of that, sometimes you can be too close to it. You're actually unable to objectively look at the business, you know, in its kind of component part form.
That's right. And
make objective decisions about it.
I mean, there's that saying, isn't there, that, you know, the too many are working in the business rather than on the business. And we've heard that many a time, but at this moment in time, it is about trying to survive, you know, whatever the uncertainties that face businesses, and there's a lot of them, and we've touched them on already. But as I say, you know, to communicate and to talk to their professional advisors, their immediate professional advisors, whether it's the accountant, the banker, or their lawyer, you know, that is key. To going forward.
And I guess, you know, the key thing is to do that early.
Early, yeah.
Rather than do that as a sort of a last resort, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I guess the longer you leave it,
the less options you have.
Yeah, the more kind of creditor, backlog kind of builds up.
Correct.
You know, the less chance you've got of reaching an agreeable solution with those guys.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. Okay, so tell me about, you know, how I would go about kickstarting that conversation with you, Adrian. What would I do? Just call you up and say, look, I've been thinking about my business. I'm not entirely sure that I am solvent anymore, but I do think I've got a good business there, and I just need some help in kind of understanding how we can make it work. What would be the process that I would go through to kind of have that conversation with you?
Yeah, okay. I mean, in normal circumstances, the business owner would speak to their professional advisor, who then refer them to someone like me, an insolvency practitioner.
I think that's an interesting one as well, isn't it? Because how many small businesses actually sit down with their accountant on a sort of regular basis?
They don't.
You know, most people see their accountant once a year. And in fact, now is that time, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because your tax return's due in today.
Yes.
I'd say, though, from our point of view, though, it's true. Because sometimes, I know certainly my partner John does this quite a lot, when he's speaking to clients to say, well, I've got this problem, that's when you realise actually they've got another problem. And often that's when they need to speak to Adrian.
That's right.
And that, you know, John will put them in touch with Adrian. Because it's, you as you, they can't see the wood for the trees.
Yeah,
sometimes.
That's right. Yeah, and it's masking the real problem. You know, it,
yeah,
yeah. What they're looking at is a symptom, actually, of something much bigger. Yeah.
You can apply those simple tests. Business owners, small business owners, can apply a very simple test, insolvency test, and it's either, you know, do your liabilities exceed your assets on the balance sheet? Alternatively, are you able to service your debts or pay your debts as and when they fall due? If, you know, if you fall down on either of them, then that's when you've got an insolvency problem.
And I guess, in some ways, business owners can help themselves directly anyway by having that conversation perhaps with a creditor.
Yeah.
You know, when an invoice becomes due, and saying, look, you know, can I extend the payment terms by, you know, 15 days or 30 days, whatever, because I'm, you know, I'm just going through a tough kind of, process at the
moment. Absolutely. I think we've already touched on about, communication being key, and talking to, you know, businesses talking to their creditors and their suppliers will go a long way, because, you know, I think those suppliers, you know, they would prefer to, you know, somebody speak to them and say, we, you know, I've got an issue here, rather than get a nasty surprise through the post that the company's going to go into a form of insolvency.
But I mean, the underlying kind of issue in many ways, isn't it, is going back to what you were saying earlier, is, you know, there has been a sort of steady flow of cheap money available to businesses during the pandemic, you know, whether it be a bounce back loan, a coronavirus business interruption loan, or now recovery loans.
Yes.
And I saw something else in the press, I think last week, about, potentially making the banks liable for some of these, bad loans that were issued because, you know, were the banks actually administering the loans as they should have been? Because as far as I was aware, you know, certainly with bounce back loan, I think you could borrow something like up to a quarter of your turnover was the kind of the guideline max. But were banks actually, you know, auditing and verifying those kind of turnover figures, or were they just, you know, was it a self-cert kind of, you know, mortgage scenario?
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember at the time, you know, was it April, May 2020, you know, when there wasn't the uptake on the CBILS wasn't happening. So the government, obviously the big cry out from a lot of businesses that needed emergency funds and hence the bounce back loans and obviously the banks insisted on 100% guarantee from the government. I think the government had no choice.
Yeah.
Of course, and it was very easy to apply for them, and banks were kind of sending the money out, knowing that they'll it's guaranteed.
That was the acid test in many ways, wasn't it? All of a sudden, the floodgates opened,
absolutely,
and everybody could have a loan.
Absolutely.
Whereas
right.
before, the banks were judging it in the way that they would have always judged a loan. So in many ways, they are culpable, aren't they?
I mean, between a rock and a hard place, though, as a lender, because you're getting pressure from the government, you've got to start handing out this money because people need the help, and then now if they turn back around and say, well, you know, what checks did you do before you handed out the money, it's a tough one.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, Adrian, on the basis of all of this, if I feel that, you know, I've exhausted all avenues and I need to have a conversation with someone in the know, what's the best way to get in touch with you? How can we get in touch with you at Opus?
Yes, Adrian.Dante, should I say, at Opus LLP .com. We're on obviously our website www.opuslp.com. If you go to our website, there is there's a section there that helps businesses, and obviously we're at a time of financial and operational challenges for business owners. We recognise the needs for support is even greater and vital for stability, but we've created a business resilience hub as a source of information for directors and shareholders to help them help businesses through the crisis. Now, I think a lot of people that are listening today and generally they know what potential procedures are there to help for business survival. It doesn't have to be a liquidation. There will be inevitably a lot of liquidations, but there's there are procedures in place to help the company survive, whether that's through an administration or whether it's through a company voluntary arrangement. And there are options, and as we touched on earlier, you know, the important aspect, as I've probably said over the last 2 years, is that the earliest you get to see you get some help, you know, the more options you've got available.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Adrian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For now. Do stay with us.
Yes, absolutely.
We're going to play a little bit of music.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're going to talk to Gareth at SNS Solicitors. So join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the Biz Connect radio show, everybody. This wonderful Monday afternoon. Delighted to say that we're now going to have a chat with Gareth Scott from SNS Solicitors in Maidstone. Gareth, lovely to have you in the studio with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and lovely to actually be out and about seeing people.
Absolutely, yeah. No, we're delighted to be back live in the studio, as it were. Gareth, just give us an introduction to SNS, if you can, and what you guys kind of specialise in as a firm, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a specialist litigation and dispute resolution firm. So we started looking at really what our clients needed and what our expertise was, and we really try and help get businesses, small, medium size, and private individuals kind of out of those kind of really tricky, difficult emotional situations in the best way possible, so they can kind of, you know, get on with their lives and with the best way in the world, not need lawyers, yeah, as much as possible.
So give us some practical examples. What are we talking about here for a business owner? Typically, is it something as simple as, you know, a customer hasn't paid me?
Yeah, I mean, more often than not, that's what it comes down to for all business owners. It's how do I get my money and someone's not paying me, or you know, we can't agree on precisely what it was that we were supposed to do, and that can be for all sizes of business and agreement. From the smallest to the largest. And yeah, a lot of it is, it's debt collection, it's helping people with when there is confusion or disagreement over their terms of business, or unfortunately, as is more often the case than we would like, when people forget or neglect to actually write down what they've agreed to do for
right.
each other and what the rates of pay are. And that's the worst thing, because that always ends up being the nastiest, most long-winded disputes, because everybody has a different recollection and memory of what it was that was agreed that they do. And particularly with smaller businesses, you know, what one transaction can sort of make or break a business. And a lot of time people do it, oh, well, it's with a mate, it's someone I've known for a long time. And we always say that's the best way to ruin the relationship, is not to actually get it written down formally and make sure we both understand what's going on.
So similar to what Adrian was talking about here, you know, do the basics early, you know, get in early, dot the I's, cross the T's.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one thing that, I mean, one thing we realised quite early on after we started SNS was that the experience that we have in seeing where it can go wrong for businesses actually helps us with those, the clients of ours that we've had for a long time, because we understand their businesses, we know how they work, we know what their issues are. And the idea then is that we've drafted their documents, we've drafted their contracts, their terms and conditions, shareholders agreements, those sorts of things, so that we know that they are covered, which makes it, when things do go wrong, because inevitably they do, and that's the world in which, you know, we live, it's a lot easier to kind of state your position and get what you need for your client.
Got something tangible to fall back on, I guess.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're doing all the work out the back of the problem, of the time at which client isn't getting paid for the work that they've done, all the services they provided.
So on an individual level, on a sort of personal level, what does litigation look like? Is it sort of neighbour disputes? Is it party wall stuff? I mean, what does it cover?
Could be anything. I mean, my main areas of expertise are disputes over properties and disputes over probate, trusts and estates.
That would be what, family members squabbling over their inheritance? Unfortunately,
sadly. I mean, the reality is, when there hasn't been a lot of money around, when people haven't been, you know, people are losing jobs, businesses are going under, a lot of the time these days, the only way people can see that they're ever going to have savings or make money or be able to feel kind of successful is sadly when a loved one dies and then they inherit, and everyone has an idea of what they're going to get, and then these disputes generally arise out of either the shape of what they're going to get being different than what they were expecting, or there not being as much there, or money or assets going to someone else who they believe they shouldn't be going to. They're always very, very emotive kind of by nature. Same issue with property disputes. I've seen quite a big growth over the last couple of years in boundary disputes and neighbour disputes, largely because people are spending so much time at home. You know, people sadly are realising that they don't really like most of their neighbours because they're at home all the time, seeing them living on top of each other, and then the smallest things become a massive issue. You know, an Englishman's home is his castle and all that, and, and it's amazing how irate people can get over a tree or a bush or a little bit of fencing.
I love the way you talk about these things. You've got such a sort of an honest sort of...
Well, it's just, I mean, you have to... I try and do with my clients, I try and have those really honest conversations with them about... It's about asking how important this is to you. How much does this actually affect your life? And is it going to be worth the stress that is inevitably going to be caused by it? Because I can't take the stress away as a solicitor. I can do my best to find a an outcome for them that everyone can live with. But there is always going to be stress. And for some people, the answer is, yes, it is enough. It's that important to me. And for some people, it's about reflecting on and realizing... maybe it's not, or maybe there's another way we can think about dealing with this. And that's a really important part of what we do. Not just the minute someone comes in, you don't just see them as a kind of open checkbook and jump on top and think, right, how much money can I get out of this one? Because that's not really why people are coming to you.
I can tell you've got a knack of sort of getting to the crux of the problem quickly. Everything you've just described, I'm thinking, crikey. You think about the number of home offices that have sprung up in people's back gardens. People have been building these enormous sheds, you know, probably too close to boundaries, and, you know, sort of viewing in on other people's gardens with windows now, and crikey.
And it's if you've lived a nice quiet life at home, you know, you're retired and you've been at home, it's nice and quiet, and suddenly next door neighbours are at home all the time playing music, the walls aren't that solid, that's becoming a noise nuisance for you, or if they've started cutting down the hedge in a way you don't like, now they're damaging your trees, or and people spend more time looking at their properties when they're at home, and suddenly that tree that was a beautiful oak tree in the garden is now an imminent threat to the foundations of their own property, and when in reality half the time it's not, but it's helping people see through that sometimes.
I've just had a neighbour that's built a boxing gym in his back garden. And I mean, literally a full size ring. And I think he's going to be sort of running it as a sort of a boxing training business. You know, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Because actually I need to lose a few pounds and I'm looking forward to doing a bit of gym work.
But it's not the everyday thing you expect to see.
There's also, impact on the traffic outside.
Well, of course it will. Of course it will. And it's bound to lead to disputes. Where's everybody going to park their car, you know, when they come for a bit of a training session, you know? So yeah, it's an interesting one. So, tell us under COVID, what's kind of been going on with the legal system, the court system specifically, Gareth? Has it caused problems and backlog? And
I mean, the short answer is yes, and the long answer is it's highlighted and compounded, I think, issues that we were all seeing already. There has been for some time, and I can only really speak for the civil justice system because that's what we work in, but there has been for some time overarching kind of national plans to in theory, streamline and make the system more efficient. That has led to a vast reduction in the number of hearing centres that are open, a reduction in the number of full-time judges. And then, unfortunately, when the pandemic hit, that just was magnified, you know, 1,000 times. And the backlog is massive. The difficulty is you've got court staff who are all doing the absolute best they can in almost impossible situations a lot of the time. And when you do manage to get a hearing and you do manage to get a date, getting everything in place in one time and then getting on Microsoft Teams or whatever it is to get it all done doesn't always work. And sometimes it's not through the fault of anyone in particular, but then the hearing gets adjourned and you've been waiting months and months for hearings, and it just becomes very, very difficult. There isn't the court time. And that impacts, of course, on expectations of clients and what they need, because when they come to you, they don't expect you to say to them, this might take 2 or 3 years to get to an end.
And the problem you were talking about off air also is the fact that because of this kind of streamlined approach that and kind of road that we'd gone down pre-COVID, you haven't necessarily got access to a judge who's an expert in that particular field. And you know, they may not feel qualified to kind of hear on that case, and then you go back to the drawing board, I guess, and you know, it's...
Yeah, absolutely, and you do find that, and you find that the court's doing what they can to get you in front of a judge, and then sometimes you turn up, some areas require judges with special skills who have, you know, in practice. I think it's fair to say that any any non-lawyer would expect that if they were sitting in front of a judge, it would be a judge who had some expertise in that area, whether gained through having been on the bench for a long time or in practice as a professional lawyer. And sometimes it's not the case. And, yeah, we recently had a case where the judge very, very reasonably, very sensibly took a look at the case and said, look, this is not my area and it needs to be dealt with by a specialist chancery judge. And it's been adjourned off for that. That's the right thing. But that's not providing any outcome for any of the parties involved in that, that case. And it used to be a lot easier to have that engagement with the court system. You know, you can't phone a line and get through to anyone at any specific court anymore. And then it took me 3 hours the other day to get through to anybody to speak. And that's not practical for anybody. It's not helpful. We're not getting anybody to where they need to go, which is just creating more cost, more time, more stress for everybody involved.
So the court system is looking a little bit like the NHS backlog at the moment in terms of people that, you know, want day-to-day care, you know, and they're simply not able to access it, or they're in a, you know, they're in a massive, you know, waiting list and queue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's fair to say, like everything, the NHS, the court system, everybody is working to capacity and working incredibly hard. It's just that the capacity isn't there.
It's just not there.
And, you know, we aren't back to normal, and I don't think normal is ever going to be the way we want it to be. I mean, there's a push at the moment that was starting a few years back to try and start having online courts for smaller value claims. But the talk of an online court sounds like a wonderful idea, but they're talking about the idea of the initial decision being made by someone who potentially isn't a lawyer, a qualified lawyer, on the papers without you getting in front of a judge and being able to present your case. For someone like me, that's terrifying because that's been the backbone of our legal system for hundreds of years. Your right to be heard by a judge. Yeah. And because of that, they want to cut the lawyers out and keep the cost down. Totally understandable. But if I have, let's say, an old lady who's been scammed out of her life savings or something, that is a massively valuable claim to her, and she can't navigate an online system and deal with all of that. Those things aren't going to work very well. But it's finding a middle ground. It's trying to find a way to get things done efficiently, cost effectively, and quickly, with the least amount of stress and worry for people.
Fantastic. Well, I think, you know, there clearly is an alternative, and I guess that is not going to court at all. And I think what I'd like to do is play a little bit of music, and then perhaps when we come back, talk about some of the alternatives, in terms of mediation, for example, that obviously exists. So do stay with us, and we'll be back straight after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the final part of the BizConnect radio show today. Thank you so much for your company. We've been talking with Adrian Dante from Opus Restructuring and Insolvency, and also Gareth Scott from SNS Solicitors. Gareth, just wanted to kind of follow on from our discussion before the break in terms of, you know, the courts, you know, there being a huge kind of backlog in the courts at the moment, the kind of the streamlining also of the the courts themselves and the kind of the court process, and that obviously leading to more problems. But there is clearly an alternative to going to court, in inverted commas, as it were, and that is mediation. And I think mediation is something that's becoming increasingly popular. Just give us an outline of what that mediation process is and what that looks like.
Sure, absolutely. It is becoming very popular, and it's a very, very powerful tool. I mean, in civil disputes, mediation is simply you appoint a mediator. Now, that's someone who is an expertly qualified mediator. Their job is not to give you a judgment. They're not going to tell you what they think. They're not going to tell you what they think the answer is. But what they're going to do is try and facilitate. That's the really important word in mediation. It's about facilitating an agreement or a settlement between parties. Usually what happens is the different parties will agree on the identity of a mediator. And depending on what kind of dispute it is, you might look for, you know, if it's quite a technical legal dispute about a contentious probate matter, you might want a lawyer lawyer or a retired judge who's a mediator that actually had expertise in that area, because they're going to really be able to cut through what's going on. If it's a building dispute or construction or something to do with property, it might be practical to have a surveyor as a mediator, because they can really get to the crux of it. But essentially, it involves everybody getting together, not always in the same room, but ideally if you can, and taking the opportunity to speak to the mediator privately, talk about their cases, talk about the positions, and for the mediator to kind of really test the case. So push them and ask sometimes awkward, you know, uncomfortable questions. But those questions, it's always confidential and private. So everything you say to the mediator is totally confidential. They can't take it out of that room, and they can't go to the other side with it, which allows that kind of freedom to explore everything. And then the mediator goes between the two rooms, two parties, sometimes brings the parties together, sometimes passing offers that are made. And the reality is that it can be extraordinarily successful. Mm. What you really need is buy-in from the parties. You need everybody to be committed to wanting to find a way to settle. And we often find that we're saying to clients, if anybody walks away from a mediation happy, it hasn't gone well. Because the idea of it is it's compromise. It's all about compromise. It's about thinking, how can we get out of this in a way that we can live with, and that kind of weight can be lifted off our shoulders? And if your clients trust you enough to understand that it's a powerful tool, it can really work wonders and get things dealt with, and get things dealt with quickly and efficiently and at short notice. Mm. And both myself and John we regularly represent our clients in mediation, but we're also fully qualified mediators and act in mediation as well. So we have that experience across the whole kind of spectrum of how that works.
And I guess there's an important reality check for a lot of people there as well, in terms of, you know, if you're going through the small claims court, for example, you know, the cost of your legal advice could well be in excess of, you know, the money ultimately that you're going to get back. So mediation would make far more sense in many respects.
It absolutely can do. I mean, it's important always to remember, probably 95% of cases that you deal with never get before a court, but the ones that do are the ones that really seem like they're totally intractable and people aren't going to be able to agree. But the earlier that you can get into mediation, the earlier you can get round the table and talk about it, the more likely you are to save costs and get it done. The court does offer a kind of free small claims mediation on small claims cases, but it's by telephone, and it's not quite the same as a sort of formal commercial mediation that we're talking about. Often it's about people that won't talk to each other and will only talk to each other through lawyers. If you get them around a table and they just see each other across the table, and sometimes the case is saying, look, I'm not trying to screw you over. I just want what I'm owed. And the other person saying, oh, sometimes you see them, their demeanor changes. And they suddenly realize that actually, oh, okay, well, maybe we do have, there is a way we can communicate and get this done. And I've seen that happen multiple times.
Communication, again, going back to what Adrian was talking about earlier, you know, the earlier you can, you know, talk to somebody, you know, in the process, the better, I guess, ultimately.
Absolutely. And you know, lawyers can sometimes get in the way of that communication, because, you know, we can take over with what we know the law is, what we know the process is, and what you need to do. And I see our job actually very much as trying to make sure we're not just adding to tensions. We need to be trying, to put forward our client's case, but get a way for both parties to understand where each one is coming from, because you do want to get it settled. You do. And I often say to clients, you know, if I'm telling you we should mediate, I'm telling you basically that you shouldn't be paying me or my firm to go all the way to trial. So you can trust what I'm telling you, because I'm not saying write me a big fat check. I'm saying we need to get this done, and we need to make sure that it's not putting a massive hole in those life savings that you've got.
Fantastic. So on that basis, you know, whether you're a business or an individual that's looking for advice on a mediation level or on a kind of a court process level, how do we get in touch with S&S? What's the best way to kind of make contact with you and John?
Yeah, so through our website. So for S&S, it's snslaw.co.uk. And you'll find all the information about what we do there, and you can click a link in our email addresses. And for mediation, mediatekent.com. And that again gives you a bit of background about the process. You can send us an inquiry, give us a call. We're always on the end of the phone, always happy to have a chat about anything.
Gareth, thank you so much for joining us today. Adrian, lovely to have you, with us today as well. I think we've had some really interesting discussions about, obviously legal matters and also kind of commercial, matters with businesses at the moment. So, it's been lovely to have you joining us as well, our listeners. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with another show, and I believe the lovely Lynette Wood will be co-hosting again with us on the day. But for now, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.